We read a passage from James, and it's about the tongue, but we're going to be looking particularly at the tongue within the book of Proverbs. Now, recently there was a show on TV, that's me, show on TV that had, it was about ants, and one of the words for ants was about a tongue. I wonder if anyone can guess which one it is. The hand going up. Sorry?
The beer ad.
Tim's extra dry. That's right. This tongue comes out of the mouth and it crawls across the road. And I know Kerry's reaction. She says, turn it over. Get it onto something else. And it was interesting on the program I saw how many people thought it was a horrid ad. Okay, it's a horrible ad. We're not talking about a physical thing. We're not talking about the sort of tongue that this thing comes across the road. We're actually talking about, in the sense of poetry or literature, it's wise claims, and it's using the tongue to talk about communication. We want to think about communication. Now, in the book of Proverbs, there are more than 100 statements connected with the tongue or communication. More than 100. You people, I'm going to be putting verses up here this morning, and you're not going to see all 100. We're going to just pick a few of them. But communication is an important topic. And in a book about wisdom and about how one should live, and it's mentioned at least a sort of number of times, you think this is important. And if you can just take your mind back to the reading in James and see about the power of the tongue, then you'll understand why it's so important. Communication occurs in all sorts of ways today. I'm speaking to you, so I'm communicating. I had people put their hand up. That's communicating without actually saying anything, but you're indicating something. And we see communication occurring at all sorts of levels. We've got the internet today. The amount of communication that occurs through email and the chat room. Communication is occurring. People are speaking to one another at all sorts of areas and levels. And then I can talk about TV or the movies, and you get people like Michael Moore who makes a movie to make a statement. Okay, he does things to make a statement. Other movies you and I go and sit out just simply to enjoy. But we're communicating, and that's what's sort of happening. But today, you want to think about communication, particularly verbal communication, and its results, and also how then should I speak, knowing the danger or the health that can be coming. So what we want to think about first of all is know that our speech has the ability to hurt or heal. It can do that. But as we think about that, I want us to ask this particular question. How can our communication or speech do this? How is it possible that my speaking can hurt or heal? Oh, that's another one. The reason is because speech has power. Great power. Who's heard of this? Sticks and stones will break my bones, no words will ever hurt me. Okay, how many of us said it? I wonder, is it really true? It's not. In fact, the Bible would actually tell you that it's not true. Words have great power. They tell us in a number of ways that sort of power. Let me put one particular verse up. The tongue, in Proverbs 18:21, has the power of life and death. Have you ever thought about it like that? The tongue, or our words, have the power of life and death. I mean, it seems extreme, doesn't it? Life and death, my words can do that. In a courtroom, a judge and the witnesses and the jury actually have that power by their words to bring about a, if like, a judgment on a person that could be life or death. But I'm not thinking about that. I don't want to think about just our normal conversation. When Kerry and I were married, we had a particular song played for us in our wedding car by the carpenters. Okay, so that shows how old we are, because people in this room are saying, who? Who are the carpenters? Is that some person with a hammer and a nut? Is that Chris going off to it? No. Okay, the carpenters were a popular group in the 70s.
Yes.
And that gives you a clue of how old we are. But Karen Carpenter, they played a movie about her, and in 1983 she died of heart failure. The reason she died of heart failure was that she began to get involved in anorexia. And because she had lost so much weight, the body just didn't survive. Here she is, she's part of a very famous and world famous popular music group. How is it that she came to this position? Based on the movie, it comes from a reviewer who said this: Karen is Richard's chubby sister. That's what a reviewer said. Two words is chubby sister. Okay, that's what he said. And that affected her. It actually turned around her whole thinking about herself. And she then began to snort and eat. And there are other problems in her life, but those particular words had great power and brought about, in fact, her death. We need to understand speech has great power. And even though the words may not have been meant to her, we need to understand that reckless words pierce like a sword. It's another verse from Proverbs. Can you imagine your words piercing like a sword or someone stabbing you with a dagger? That's the sort of way the wise people of the past, led by God to write down this information for you and I, talk about words. They have the power to stab or pierce like a sword. And it talks about reckless words. I don't think ever the person that made those words about Karen Carpenter ever thought that they would hurt or cause her to die. As a response to her reaction. They were just reckless words, never intended to hurt, but they did. And they sort of stabbed her to hurt. I think most of us here would probably admit we've spoken thoughtlessly at some point. And we found out that those careless words have been very harmful. And no matter how much we want, we can't seem to take those words back. We'd love to, but we can't, because those words have hurt. Words just don't bounce off. I guess all of us would like to think they do, and some of us pretend they do, because of the way we speak. We think they mustn't hurt. They don't bounce. They pierce, and they go in deep. And they do the damage. They embed in the mind and in the heart of an individual. And so we need to understand the great power of our words, of our tongues. And that's what James is writing about in chapter 3 that we read earlier. The great power of the tongue. So there is great power in words. I'm just going to run a few verses past you. A scoundrel plots evil, and his speech is like a scorching fire. Okay, again, the power to scorch, to burn. That's what words can be like. Or a cynic is exalted, it says in the Bible. To put the rest of the verse there, the wise can exalt by their conversation of cities, and by the mouth of the wicked, a city is destroyed. The great power of just the words that you and I can utter. They also can affect ourselves too. Proverbs 6 verse 2. You have been trapped by what you have said and snared by the words of your mouth. You can be trapped yourself by your own conversation. Or the next one. An evil man is trapped by his sinful words. Remember, they have power not just to hurt others, but also to catch you out and to hurt you. So there is great power in speech. But that great power can bring about harm or health. We said already, reckless words can pierce like a storm. There's a great contrast in the two verses I'm going to present to you now. The contrast between, perhaps if you like, poor words and good words. So let's see the rest of this particular verse. But the tongue of the wise brings healing. You see the contrast. Reckless words can pierce and cut deep into the heart and mind of an individual. But the tongue of the wise can bring healing. It can bring about a change. It may not take away all of the hurt, but it certainly can bring about some healing and renewal, which is really important. So that's the first contrast. The next verse says, the tongue that brings healing is a tree of life. I don't know, some of you in the room will have quite an understanding of the Bible. You can be thinking of all sorts of trees that are mentioned in Scripture. There's a tree of life mentioned in the creation. There's a tree of life mentioned in Revelation. There's a tree of life, if you like, considered. It's talked about through the Psalms. for the breakthrough of Psalm 1, standing by the waterside, gaining all of the strength and growing, and it's connected to a wise person. The tongue can bring about tremendous healing, like a tree of life, something that brings about good and help and encouragement. I wonder if you were to stop and think, what sort of words am I talking today? Or did I talk yesterday, or sometime in the past, or am I going to possibly say soon? Are they the reckless words that can pierce like a sword, or the tongue of the wise that can bring healing that's like a tree of life? These are the two passages. But again, there's an extra contrast, but a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. A deceitful tongue. And so you see the contrast between harm and help. For harming and hurting and crushing and healing. Words can do both, because they have this great power to do that. It's really important for us to recognize that. Word of deceitful. The actual word for deceitful tongue there is submersive or subversive. You know that? It's just trickery, it's all hidden. And some said the same, but a lot of us actually say things, but we mean something totally different. Our words are deceitful. We say something, but we have another idea behind it. And that's the sort of language that's being used consistently around us, and sadly by many of us. We have the power of speech that it can result in harm or in help. Let's see a few other verses that say the same. Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I don't know that I have to say very much about some of these statements, because I think they're very much self-explanatory. Proverbs 25:23 is, the north wind brings rain, so a sly tongue brings angry looks. Proverbs 11, with his mouth the godless destroys his neighbour. All of these words are connected with 13, aren't they? Do you know there are so many more statements about the fervent tongue than there are about the good that the tongue can be involved with? We need to be reminded of that danger, but there is always that balance, the deceitful tongue. So harm or help, remember our speech has the ability to hurt and the ability to heal. Because people listen, and speech is power. People listen to what you say. People hear what you say. And sometimes they are overhearing what we say, and we think the worst. Okay, we need to be careful. Our speech has great power, and it can heal, but it can also hurt. So knowing that, I guess the next question I want to ask ourselves is, how should I speak? How should I speak? What should I be thinking about if I'm going to say something? Because a lot of us would probably think, right now, it's better to say nothing. I say nothing, I can't get in trouble, and I can't do anything wrong. Well, later on I'm going to come to you and say, that's not going to work. But the first thing we want to know is, how should I speak? I need to listen and think first. Listen and think first. Why? Well, Proverbs chapter 10 verse 19 says, when men, words are many, sin is not absent. But he who holds his tongue is wise. Now, I don't know how you can put your tongue in front of him. It's not talking about that, is it? What's it mean when it says, he who holds his tongue? Whitney was just trying it right. What do you think it means? Being quiet, that's right. Isn't it good about big parts of scripture that are pretty clear? They don't have too much explanation. He who holds his tongue is wise. The more we talk, I guess the first part of the proverb is saying, the greater the chance there's something going on, the more we talk. So when you're in a conversation, and the conversation is going on for a long time, it's very easy for the conversation to exaggerate. We've always talked about the fishing as exaggeration. I thought, I fished years, and it got like, that style of life. We exaggerate. It's very easy in our conversation to exaggerate. And as conversation continues, it's also very easy to spray for confidence. Give away that secret message to someone who don't share with anyone else. Because you're simply talking and you're talking and you're talking. Just the many words. To break the confidence. Well, then maybe that people are sharing, well, look at my story, what happened? And then you think, well, I've got a better one. And before you know it, the stories are elevating, you've got the exaggeration, and then the jokes start to come out, and some of them are off color. It would be better to think, or listen and then think, before speaking. We need to do this. We need to be very careful. Let's look at some of the other verses that say the same thing. He who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame. Saying, whatever you respond to someone, think and listen first, otherwise that will be your own folly and your shame. We need to actually understand that there are always two sides to the story. In quarrels and in arguments, you listen to one person, you will not get a complete picture. Always take the time to listen. Always think or get the facts first. See what it says in these next verses. Proverbs 29:20. Do you see a man who speaks in haste? There is more hope for a fool than for him. And Steve spoke about the fool last week. And can you imagine all the things connected to the fool we saw last week, and we're hearing the words, a person who speaks hastily is in greater danger than being a fool. And remember, we said a fool is not someone who doesn't understand or is inadequate in their thinking. They're very intelligent people. A fool is the person who denies God. Can you imagine that your hasty words placing you in a position of greater harm than a person who denies God? We need to remember, think, or listen and then think. He who guards his mouth and his tongue keeps himself from calamity. He who guards his lips guards his life. And he who speaks rashly will come to ruin. There are just a few of the verses that talk about holding your tongue, being quiet, and those past two, guarding what you say. To guard is like an act of protection. It's making sure that what you speak is in control. Be in control. William McDonald said, the man who guards his speech controls his own life. His whole life. The man who guards his speech controls his life. That comes straight from those verses. We need to be aware. Guard what you say. Think about what you're going to say before you speak, because you can place yourself in great danger. William McDonald also said, you know, the lesson from that verse is be careful what you say, because it might be used against you. That's what the police say every time they pick someone up. Be careful what you say, because what you say can be used against you. So we need to be aware of the danger of our language. Guard your speech. Guard your speech. Well, what else might we say? Let me read this out to you, or you can read it if you can't read it again. I am more deadly than the screaming shot of Harold. I win without killing. I tear down homes, break hearts and wreck lives. I travel on the wings of the wind. No infamous is strong enough to intimidate me. No purity pure enough to daunt me. I have no regard for truth, no respect for justice, no mercy for the defenseless. My victims are as numerous as the sands of the sea, and often as innocent. I never forget and seldom forgive. My name is, what if you can guess? Gossip. My name is gossip. So how should I speak? By rejecting the idea of gossip. Proverbs 11:13, gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy man keeps a secret. Look at the next verse. And gossip betrays a confidence. Isn't it interesting how the Proverbs keep on presenting the same statement, but has a different reminder to it? So avoid a person or a man who talks too much. You need to be careful. Rejecting gossip. Gossip has all sorts of problems. I don't know that I need to say too much. Notice as it says here, a perverse man stirs up this cup or dissension, and a gossip separates close friends. The power of the gossip to bring about separation between friends. And notice it says the last one, without a wood, a fire goes out. Is that right? Who's actually been camping and trying to get a fire going? And when the wood runs out, what happens to the fire? It's gone. Without a doctor, the fire will die down. Or dies down. And if you're under the practice of gossiping, you need to understand you're actually trying to wood, storm the fire, and letting it burn. Gossip is such a dangerous and terrible thing. And it occurs so easily. It's so easy to hear this and then pass it on to someone else and someone else. Recently, Gary and I think how long ago it was, we heard someone say, if you want to know if you're a gossiper, then you ask yourself a question like this, but something like this, I think we might get it. It says, if you are part of the problem, then you can talk about it. If you're the person that's helping with the problem and sorting it out, you can talk about it. Otherwise, you're a gossiper. Okay, if you're part of the problem, then you can talk about it. If you're helping deal with the problem, then you can talk about it. But any other conversation is out of the gossip. We need to actually think about it. Because it's so easy for us to go away from here, hear what someone says, and then talk with this person and that person, and you know what they're doing. They're throwing wood on the fire is getting hotter, and all we're doing is hurting ourselves and hurting the people we're gossiping about. The power of our speech, to harm or to heal. Remember, we need to reject gossip. A funny story, I guess it is. The local pastor was supposed to be forcing his wife to go to some religious meetings against the earth. And the gossips got the message. And soon, in a small town, everybody was hearing, guess what? The pastor is supposed to be forcing his wife to go to these meetings against her will. And worse, he's now treating her badly. The pastor doesn't do anything, he says, I can't say anything, I'm just going to let it go. But in the end, it was such a bad message going around, he took out an ad in a paper. I read it now. In the first place, I never attempted to influence my wife to attend these meetings against the will. In the second place, she never attended these meetings in question. In the third place, I didn't even attend these meetings. And lastly, I do not now and never have had a wife. But that's what happens with gossip. We get a story, we get an idea, and we twist it around and become such so far from the truth. Brothers and sisters, we'll beware. Reject gossip. How should we speak? Reject gossip. Another one. To reject lying. I'm not going to show you verses about don't lie. This, I'm going to show you one verse that might help you remember I shouldn't lie. But you know, a doctor in the US recently said lying is an important part of social life, and if children aren't lying, there's some developmental problem. Can you believe that? A doctor says if a child isn't lying, they're not growing up properly. I can't believe it. A survey said 32% of all adults say the way things are these days, lying is necessary. Can you believe that? We're told lying is necessary. We live in a world today where truthfulness and lies are almost impossible to discern the difference. It's almost impossible. In fact, there are a lot of people that you will meet today and they will tell you, this is the truth because I've said so and it's truth for me. That's the way we're living. We're living in a world where people say, what's the truth? Because it's their truth. It doesn't matter what anyone else says, it doesn't care. Cheating and lying, which are connected with not being honest, is actually considered necessary to get by so many people. There's a book called The Day America Told the Truth. And in that book it gives these percentages. I was going to put them up for you, but I forgot this wisdom. 91% of those surveyed said they lie about trivial matters consistently. 91%, 91 out of 100 people say we lie about trivial things. 36 said we lie about important things. Out of 100, 86 said we lie to our parents. 75 said we lie to our friends. 74 said we lie to our brothers and sisters. And 69 said we lie to our spouse. How out of 100 people in a book they're living? Lying is not good, and a good reason to remember it's not good is to remember this verse that our Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in men who are truthful. I don't know if I need to say any more about lying, except see that word. The Lord detests lying lips. Are we lying? Because our speech has great power to harm or to heal, and if I'm lying, it's not too often that I'll be living much in the way of healing, but more often harming. Another thing I thought about in terms of thinking about how should I speak is to remember the motives of the people you are with are important. I've got a lot of verses there. Proverbs 26:28 says, a lying tongue hates those it hurts. If you're with a person and you know consistently tends to lie, then you want to understand that the motive behind their lying is that they want to hurt. They hate those people. They want to hurt. What sort of people are you standing and spending time with? Proverbs 12:6, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood. If the people that you are with tend to be wicked, that is, they don't do the things that God would be encouraged by or pleased with, then they're like people who are waiting to kill, to attack, and to draw blood. And then Proverbs 24, verses 1 and 2 says, do not envy wicked men, do not desire their company, for their hearts, what do they do? Plot violence, and their lips talk about making trouble. Who are the sorts of people that you're spending time with? What are the motives behind the things that they do and say, and how much is that in fact impacting you? Whether you're a Christian or not, you are impacted by the people you spend time with. Words have power to heal or to harm. Remember, the wise person is the one who is looking for the things that will please God. Well, I said before, and I've only given you like three reasons to think about how you should speak. But the next one is, well, what should I speak about? Remember I said before, if I hurt so many people, why am I saying nothing? Never saying nothing? Well, that's not the way it should be. We need to use our conversations to be helpful. Our conversations should not be filled with complaints and boasting and gossip and slander and you name it. It shouldn't be filled with those sorts of things. We are called to use our conversation, our messages, to build up one another. We need to speak about the things that build up people. That's what we should be doing. Building up one another. Caring for them. So it's not actually a matter of saying, oh, I don't want to say anything. You actually have a responsibility to speak. But remember, listen, then speak. Listen, then make ready to say something. Listen and guard what you're going to say. So that whatever you say will be a help. Build up. The best way you can serve others is to build them up within the Christian faith and life. Proverbs chapter 3 verse 27 says, do not withhold good from those who deserve it when it is your power to act. If I can do something good for someone, then I shouldn't withhold it. I should actually act. I should do something to help them. And the next one says that an anxious heart weighs a man down, but what does a kind word do? It cheers them up. A kind word encourages. A kind word, literally, if you like, is like food to the starving person or a drink to the thirsty. A kind word is like that. So for those who are discouraged, what sort of kind word could you say? Don't give up. You can do it. I believe in you. It would be kind words, wouldn't it? For someone who's struggling. What about someone who's doubting themselves, not feeling like they're very valuable? You know, a simple one. I appreciate what you did. You're good. You can do it. That's a kind word. But often we're not so often saying those sorts of things. Well, the person is absolutely struggling because they may think God's left them alone. To remind them, to put a gentle hand on the shoulder and say, God still cares. His grace, His power, His love and care will get you through. You might feel like He's not there, but He is. a kind word and cheer a person up. That's what we want to do. Because each time we speak in those terms, we're edifying, which means build up. Consistently in the New Testament, we're reminded to build up one another, to encourage. Our words can do that. The last thing we'll do is just a reminder of the three things, or three major things. Remember the power of speech to hurt or to heal. How should I speak because of what I can do for this message? Well, the things are, listen and think through this. Reject gossip and lying, and consider the motives of the people around you. How are they causing you to speak? And lastly, why should I speak, or what should I speak about? The things that build up. Today, know that your speech, your communication, not simply that wicked old tongue that goes across the floor, you see in the ad, but the way I talk to people can do these things. It's been challenged about what we do.